Deadwood Soundlab.
I'm Alexa.
I'm Alex.
So today we're doing The Black Cauldron from 1985. I gave you two, three choices. One was a four-hour movie. One was a three-hour, nine-minute movie. And one was an 80-minute movie. Guess which one we're doing.
80 minutes. And it was an interesting 80 minutes.
Did you guys know about this movie? Do you have any history with it?
I have a history of it. I believe I've seen it maybe once. I'm not sure how. I think I've seen it as a kid. And then also, I have a really old villains t-shirt that's Disney villains, and it's glow in the dark. It's
actually the Horn King?
Yeah. He's one of the villains in the swirl of it. It's my dad's shirt, so he's the one wearing it. And I was like, who the hell is that? Because I cursed as a very young child. That's the Horn King. And I remember him and mom discussing it and then discussing whether or not I should watch the movie. That being said, there's also shit from like Fantasia on it. And that was terrifying. The end.
As a kid.
Oh, yeah. I remember at the end, the first Fantasia anyway, scared me a lot. Where everything ends. It's just the apocalypse, I think, of the world.
It's super frightening.
Oh, no. And then everything is reborn again. So it's all good, but it's super scary.
The scariest is The Last Unicorn.
I don't know. Ferngully is also...
Ferngully? Oh, that's a little later. But yeah.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
And it's still, we had some dark 80s stuff.
And it's still happening. That's the scary part about Ferngully.
So you saw it just in that kind of cluster probably as well. Like a lot of kids saw it when I was way younger, probably just in a stream of other Disney movies that I had seen.
So here's the opportunities you could have seen it if you were a kid. 1984, which is when I saw it in the theater. So I only vaguely remembered it.
I was not born. So.
And then 1990 when they re-release it. But they call it Taran and the Magic Cauldron because they're trying to rebrand it to see if they can get it to sell this time. The answer was no. But and then it finally comes out on DVD in 97. It never had a VHS release.
That's when I saw it, and I would be 7 years old. So
it didn't come out in any kind of VHS or anything?
Nope. And didn't play on TV. Like, they were embarrassed by it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I wonder why.
It was the biggest loss for an animation studio ever at the time. It was the biggest budget for an animation ever at the time. It didn't work for the new leadership. This is one of those things where you get a bunch of CEOs brought in, which will go, but there's a CEO shuffle at Disney at this time.
Okay.
These are the troubled times. And then you just watch them get bitten over and over again. Tim Burton does a bunch of character design for it. They throw it away. He puts out Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Totally outgrosses The Black Cauldron.
Like, yeah.
Shoves it right in their face.
I'm wondering, though, too, is like, how is that the biggest of their folly during this era? They don't release a VHS copy of this? Like, that was such a moneymaker on the back end of things that weren't theatrically successful, especially in the mid-80s.
Yeah, so they're so embarrassed by it that they're not even doing a VHS. Wow. Oof.
So Jeffrey Katzenberg comes over when Eisner's the final CEO on The Black Cauldron. There will have been three during the making of this movie.
Only three? Come on.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, and a
period of a couple of weeks where there wasn't one. So that was the thing too.
Did they make decisions still?
That's why one of the CEOs jumped in, who was overseeing the animation department and acted as CEO for a year and a half and then got shit canned when they brought in Michael Eisner. All of this turmoil going on. This movie's at the center of it. Jeffrey Katzenberg gets brought over. Star Trek the Motion Picture. He got that done. And he also goes on to start DreamWorks with Spielberg and David Geffen. He goes on to do Quibi. Quibi was an app on your phone that had short content. You were supposed to be able to watch watch it in like, it was like 5 minutes while you're standing in line or whatever. And then you only get 5 minutes at a time. You can't watch more than one a day when it's a series. It was this whole thing of like, and your phone is always going to be in portrait mode. It's never going to be landscape.
Yeah.
And it was this giant, very public bomb.
Teenager would automatically be like, that's dumb.
Never and adults were also back. Like, that's dumb, dude. Let me flip my phone to the side. What are you doing? We should get into the synopsis of this thing. And before I begin, don't worry, it's only 357 words, so I've concised it down. Taran Pigkeeper to Dalben the Enchanter dreams of becoming a warrior. The pig Henwen becomes disturbed. Dalben reveals the pig is an oracle when it projects a vision of the Horn King seeking the Black Cauldron to raise an undead army. The king sees the pig through the vision caused by Dalben to send Taran and the pig away for fear that he would use Henwen to find the cauldron.
Kid wants to be a tough guy so bad. Why can't I just be a warrior? Oh, his voice is so bad. Obviously, like, middle-aged man trying to play a kid is what it sounds like. Maybe it's the opposite.
I immediately think that the pig is some sort of woman trapped in a pig's body.
Because that's what Disney has taught us.
Exactly. Some kind of
plus the pig's eyes are beautiful.
Yes.
The cutest pig. It's drawn so beautifully. I'm like, this is obviously the main character is the pig. And the fact that it never gets transfigured back into something. Yeah, it was like the oracle within the first initiation.
It's the whole plot.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be. Weird. Then he has to keep looking after the pig. Oh, make sure you look after her. Oh, take her to the cabin in the back of the woods. And all this.
Escapes a butcher. Spoilers. Siskel
loved the pig. He hated the movie. But he had a lot of good things to say about the pig and Creeper. Which, like, dude, I don't know what he's
saying. Everybody just liked her pretty eyes, and they're so creepy like that.
They are. People animation on this is so interesting. So they, like, spent so much time on the backdrops and everything, and, like, actual character animation. The, like, humans in it seem to be kind of, like, lacking detail in certain scenes. It's very apparent. You just phone that one in.
They storyboard all these beautiful pastels that were going to completely break what Disney did at animation at the time. And then as people keep getting brought in and brought
and this
in,
is the opening.
It changes and it becomes more like Sleeping Beauty at a certain point.
Yeah, so this is the opening. The opening is like wonderful, kind of weird. You have to like kind of meet these characters who you don't really seem that invested in other than the pig. Then you go into the hero's journey and he just is staggering through these situations. He's just handed everything this boy.
Yeah.
He doesn't hardly have to work for anything. He's literally, sword falls out of the sky for him.
Yeah. Like, the wizard sends him off. He takes the pig. He loses the pig. He meets a guy named Gergi, who is totally Andy Serkis's voice.
Really? Yeah, Andy Serkis is like...
Yeah, it is.
And like, it's not him, but that's clearly what he was doing.
It's a dog monkey. It's not a man. Gergi?
Yeah. It looks like my dog, Abby.
With limbs.
That's no human. Nothing against Gergi in his ways.
Gergi's annoying. Like, we can all agree on that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Gergi's obnoxious.
Yeah.
So Gergi's afraid. The boy goes over to the castle. He sees his pig in there. He's trying to escape with the pig. They threaten to kill the pig if he doesn't say how its magic powers work. Mm-hmm. So he shows them, and then he chucks the pig out the window.
Yeah.
Into the moat.
I need to keep you alive.
Into the moat. It'll swim.
Oh, that's what it is. It's not a...
They're both going to go. Yeah. And then he gets snatched by the Horn King.
Maybe that's why the Horn King needs a black cauldron and hasn't taken over yet. Is he's just got so many soldiers working on this ocean-like moat.
I think he stole this castle from some other nobler king.
Oh, right. The High King.
And that's where the sword is from. Because in the basement, when they're thrown into the dungeon of the Horn King, which is just the same castle, they find his grave.
There's many dark things that happen in the Black Cauldron.
But many easy things, too. Like, they just very easily escape the dungeon. She just comes into his room.
But that's also because the griffins are going to follow them, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the Horn King puts his incompetent person on it. They want him to lead me to the cauldron. That's my theory. I can't and really stick into it. Yeah,
it's just my theory. Well, fine, bud. Do it.
I'm trying to make this movie smarter than it actually is.
It is not.
Basically, they find the cauldron.
Oh, yeah.
Some witches trade it for the magic sword. Yep. I like that line of theme because it starts with the kid really wanting to become a warrior. And then he finds a sword and he's a warrior. But then he has to give it up and he's feeling like he's not confident. And at the end, he sees sacrifice and stuff like that. Like, I do feel like it's trying to prime you to not be all about war. But I also think it fails because there's an adventure there. I want to go to fight for the Black Cauldron.
Especially when you have a sword that can cut through anything. That
yeah, it's he a wants to be a okay, guys.
Yes.
This is a second straight movie.
Yeah. Yep.
And there are so many Sword in the Stone
things. Yeah.
Oh, it's annoying. And I want to like it. There was a lot of that.
It's a little bit of Robin Hood, though, too. There's a bit of like
Robin the one with the fox.
Yeah. Aesthetic to a bit. Like, especially
like you said, there's Sleeping Beauty. It just becomes really washed out with a bunch of other animated things I think I've seen as a kid from Disney.
They find out to destroy the cauldron, you have to have somebody sit in it and willingly sacrifice themselves.
Yes. Sit in it. Sit in it.
Yeah. Hey,
have a nice sit in seat.
And the Horn King revives the undead army, and then...
Googie sits in it.
I feel so dumb even saying Kirk. Yeah. He's like, no, Googie. No, you hang out over there. I'm just going to sit in it.
Yeah. Googie swans.
Dramatically. But that's why they have almost a diving board at the top that they have to leap into the cauldron to make it seem exciting, because you're basically sitting in a cauldron, dude.
Yeah.
At least have a splash.
I like that they have all of these other cauldrons that blow around
more before like
the Black Cauldron comes up from the ground.
The Horn King dies. I want to talk about the animation. Like, some of the most amazing 2D animation I've seen when they're like in the castle at the beginning and at the end, minus some of the stuff with the zombies coming out, because they reanimated that and it doesn't quite work. It
doesn't.
But backgrounds are amazing on it. Like, they're drawing every stone, which is just not done at that time. There's like crazy oil colors in it. They mix in CGI for the first time ever. And one of the skies in the backdrop, I think they like filmed something like purple smoke. And then they just had that up for the sky, blending live action with it too. I just found it really, really interesting at parts. But then the main characters other than the Horn King suck. Yes. They feel like they're trying to be Disney characters, but they don't quite get there. Mm-hmm. So they don't look like traditional Disney, but they also don't look like what the backgrounds look like.
Yep.
It clashes to me.
And it has a lot of clash in color palette, where they like go from the beginning, the middle, and the end all kind of look drastically different. Unpleasant. Like, I don't know. It's just not very pretty, I feel like, at the end. The beginning, it seems like they were putting a lot of effort.
So I think part of this is to kind of talk about the culture of the animators at the time. So you had the nine old men. These were these old guys that worked with Disney on the original stuff.
I've already pictured something in my head. I love it. Like this, like
sounds like a Coen's thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The nine old men.
Filled with cigarette smoke. And they're just like hanging over like big tables doing whatever the size.
No, I've seen one. It's a black and white picture that comes to mind. And there's all these men sitting at huge easels. And they're just crating their necks around it to see this beautiful young thing twirling. That's for Cinderella. Yeah, and they use that animation again and again. But it's just creepy as fuck. It's unsettling. They're like, look at this old-timey photo where they're learning to animate. And I'm like, yeah, cool. This girl is dizzy, dizzy, dizzy. And this, all these dudes are just standing around drawing her. Where's the girl drawers?
It was just nine old men.
Yep.
So they were hired in the 40s. Then your second generation of animators at Disney, because they literally hired them in generations, which is crazy. So then you get the second generation of Disney animators, and they're called the veterans. They basically take over the creative decisions for Disney in the 50s because he's busy with theme parks at that point. And so he doesn't have the time to oversee everything.
Okay? The luxury of...
Yeah.
Because this is a theme parks, so, please.
like every listener should really think about this. Like the movie business for the Disney company was changed because of theme parks. Like these are corporations, dude. They're not just making your show. They're interested in making money any way they can.
Yeah.
You have the veterans take over, but they only got so much experience animating, partly because they were also doing directing and writing and all this other stuff. So they're like branching out to a lot of things so they don't get the pencil work in. And finally, you get the newest generation, which is the outsiders, which is like, that's what they call themselves. I know, it's crazy, dude. They're so dramatic at Disney. So I guess is their field. So you get John Lasseter, who winds up starting Pixar. You get Don Bluth, who does all the big Disney cartoons in the 90s and like forms his own thing. And then you got like Tim Burton. So the CEO is like looking at all this stuff and he's like, there's nobody with enough experience to be able to do what we want to do with the Black Cauldron. And that's partly why it gets ripped apart and rebuilt over and over again. Is they're like, the animators are not good enough yet. Go do The Great Mouse Detective. The animators are not good enough yet. Go do this one. So they just keep putting it on the back burner. So already it's aging out from the people that had worked on it because you got it's people cursed. Retired, leave the company.
It's cursed. It's right on the borderline. Like everybody's like, this is my last movie. And they're like,
this is my first movie. What are you guys doing over here?
Yeah. It's so funny you say that because literally one of the nine old men was brought out of retirement just specifically to come up with the character. So I think that's why it's that like old school thing. But he's trying to be new school, but he's from the 40s. So it's not new school.
At all. Yeah. No, it does not read as new school.
So I know that was a long ways to go to explain the culture there. But I think the culture is important because Disney's fucking weird, man.
They are so off base with the fantasy level on this film.
It just feels like a fever dream of any given animated movie at that time. Shook up in a mason jar and then dumped over your head. Yep. I kept pinching myself and I'm like, I'm awake. I'm wide awake. This does not make sense.
I watched it three times. I fell asleep in the middle twice. For
real. That's exactly.
Not, yeah.
I was like, why? You had to fall. Oh, you had to fall asleep. Yeah, because it does. There's a big lull right the middle piece. If you were even slightly sleepy, you're going down.
It's structured like Ishtar. Because I like the beginning and I like the end, and whatever that plot is in the middle is just so hard to get through.
It is. You're totally right, Biggs. It has this strange plateau that you're like, oh, I hope it goes up. Like you're like,
are we saying the plot in the middle is when they're talking to the witches?
Talking to the fairies, walking around the forest. Oh my goodness, the fairies.
Yeah. That was weird. And then they just had the pig. That was nice.
Found the pig again. Then it goes uphill.
No, but then the dragons take it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when it gets exciting again. Because they have to go back to the castle.
Okay, that's it is.
It's this movie should live in the castle.
It should have.
Like, it should have been all a castle plot.
I remember watching this just now thinking, why is the Horned King not the main bad guy? And he's answering to this cauldron that he needs because he is terrifying. He's already undead. His face is a skeleton. He has antlers growing out of his head.
He's basically Skeletor.
Yet he's scared of this really other scary guy that got locked into a cauldron.
I'm going to say, though, the Horn King design, I think it's my favorite design of a Disney
That's what
character.
I'm saying. He's so scary. So why is he answering to anybody else? He's already pretty much
he needs a magic artifact. Fact because he wants to be looked at as a god among mortals is how he puts it. So my
your face is a skeleton. You're
he's
already there.
Mortal?
Your face is a skeleton. Yeah, you're weird. Immortal. Like,
well, it's a fantasy land though. That you know, some people sound British. Some people look like skeletons. I'm just saying.
He needs to look at his nutrition. Horn King
has leprosy.
What are you eating, buddy?
I have to apologize to you, Alex, that the dum-dums that were running around the castle were ogres. And I was like, no, they're just humans. They're just grotesquely drawn. And then meanwhile, there's this little toad dude who's very much green. I'm sorry for saying you were wrong. Obviously, they're ogres now.
What? thing was going on with the villain. What are they?
And so
are
then
they're human.
Big Sam must say, you're probably right then, that it's a supernatural world and that the Horned King's face is kind of just uncircumstantial. He's just like terrifying. And apparently kind of still kind of this film. That's his living body is a skull face with antlers growing out of it.
Face them and you might be okay.
I think what you're hinting at is what might be in one of the five books they were trying to adapt.
Uh-huh. Five? I could sense books. You can sense books throughout the whole movie. And they can't
do five. So they're like, no. We're going to condense 2 to 1. Dumb. They didn't think like franchises like we think. So they're like, we have to have a complete story. We can't tell a partial story.
Okay.
It's a little bit different when you think about the era.
This reminds me of a really bad novels I've read.
Yeah.
No, that's not nice because Clan of the Cave Bear is not bad, but...
Oh, dude, my grandma was really good friends with Gene L, the author of that.
It's not, but it's like bad,
I
never good.
Read it. I know it's about sex.
Read the first three.
I don't know.
Okay, it's about more than that.
It's about a lot. That's all I know.
I read the first two ones, and then I was like kind of lost after the second.
There's a lot of sex, but it's Neanderthals and humanoids evolving and trying to survive.
Gotcha.
There's also many other ones that I was trying to drum up in my head, too, that are just this dime store novels that I've read where they're traveling to a world where there's dragons and stuff, and that's what this thing, it's like you said heavy metal at some point. Biggs texted me heavy metal, and I thought, aha. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah. But then there's no TNA. Like, there's no heavy metal.
There kind of is, though, in a way, as much as you can get away with it in a Disney movie. Because when they're in that tavern, that girl is, like, shaky jiggly.
The girl with the tits and the falls and the...
I appreciated her body positivity, yeah.
I did, yeah.
I think we see a little bit of it again at the end of the movie with the witches, right? Like, isn't one of the witches really buxom me too?
It's weird because they're almost making being buxom gross because the witches are supposed to be kind of gross, I think. I don't think they are too despicable, but they're making them like warty and like weird, exaggerated features and such. It's very racy for Disney, I will agree.
They didn't really prettify up. People, it's like weird.
I liked that. Yeah, it was very weird. That was pretty. Were people pretty in Fern Gully?
Fern Gully, yeah, had some aspects to that.
I never actually watched that one. It seemed like a bummer when I was a kid, so I just never watched it.
Maybe that's why the rest of the movie seems better, but then misplaced because there's all these side characters that are really interesting looking, and the main two kids are very boring and very nondescript and don't make a lot of sense for that reason comparatively, because they're so precious moments perfect.
They're basically both Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Right?
Like totally blank character.
Blank.
But I would say that's the style that fantasy takes most often too, is you get that one character that's just like bland as hell. So but they have two and that's one too many.
I guess it's a kid's movie. So they're just trying to be like, hey boy, hey girl, here's the one you're both supposed to look at and think about, which is baloney. Right. Even the minstrel, I could tell, I was like, there's something more behind this guy that I'm not getting, that they're not letting me see. It's either a book or something. Someone eventually said editing, but you could just sense it. And the kids, you're like, eh, fuck these kids. Who cares?
So Jeffrey Katzenberg, when he comes over, he forcibly edits 11 minutes by locking himself into the edit bay. And even though he's not an editor, he did it himself. And this was because he had a fight with one of the directors, because they always edited before you animate because it's too expensive to go back. So he's like, no, that's locked. Like, we're not going to do that. So he goes to edit it, and like, it's just a mess. The director runs to Michael Eisner, and he's like, do you know what he's doing? And he like called him up, stop editing right now. He's like, there still needs to be 10 minutes out, and the ending's too scary. So the 10 minutes they take is that bard character. Somebody took photos of one of the animators' boards that were up in 1983, and it has the entire movie in it, so you can tell what was cut from it, and it's all of his plot. So he's just this useless character that you meet because he is not going to do anything in the entire movie.
No, he whips out his harp one time and then...
Yeah, the harp is completely unexplained why it keeps breaking its strings.
I figured that out and it's supposed to be a laugh, but it gave me a huh. Yeah, which is, it's a liar. And so whenever he lies, the string clocks.
Yeah.
At some point, you can see that the strings are not actually broken. So I breathe a sigh of relief. So,
yeah, I was really bummed out that we had a bard and he was already useless because
the minstrel of the bard. Yeah, and he was just like, all right, didn't play a tune.
Yeah, that guy was worthless in it. I thought the dog was really scary when
the
it comes.
The dog monkey?
The guard's dog.
Okay. Yeah. It was almost a dog version of the Horn King. I'll put it that way. Like, it's just like a lot of bared teeth, like looked like it wanted to
it
kill people.
It seemed like the Peter and the Wolf.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Little
everything bit just tiny, seemed yeah. like something I'd seen before. And so it didn't scare me. But the one thing I had never seen before was the Horn King. Oh. And then
except
he's
on a shirt.
Yeah, and so then finally seeing the movie, he wasn't very scary because he's just lusting after a cauldron. And then he gets it. Then he doesn't become godlike because he's done. Does he not get sucked into the cauldron?
Yeah, he gets sucked into the cauldron.
So that's added in.
So that was in the original. Basically, it takes him and he's like, you see his flesh kind of go in there. So that somehow
Have flesh. Okay. Yeah. Repeat. Not full skeleton.
But I mean, like it gets ripped off and then like you see the next layer of him go in and then the bone, like
they
take him in parts, which somehow that stayed. But one of the things they cut was when the zombie things like come out of the cauldron,
yeah,
they immediately kill this guy, but they like slowly eviscerate him until he's nothing. And so like that drove kids in the test screening out of the room. Like they were screaming, parents were like, we're done with this, like stomping off. So they had to completely reanimate that. Because, like, it was too scary for kids.
But the cauldron sucking him up is fine.
That's, apparently, that was tame enough to keep in.
Children's sense of justice. They're okay. Like, yeah.
Yep.
And then Googie comes back. Okay, fine.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. He gets resurrected by a witch, right? So you got your Jesus story. Googie's your Jesus character. He's like, I thought it was a little much when he fell backwards on the diving board, arms stretched out.
Yeah. I thought that was a...
I like to imagine my Jesus with a mustache and covered in hair. Terrier meets Gibbon. There's all these equations for him to be adorable, and I still don't like him. Googie.
So one of the things I read was the guy who played Radar in MASH. He wound up being forcibly removed while he's trying out for Gurgi because the director is like,
I love this.
Is like, do it this way. And then he does Radar for Matt. Like, he doesn't know what the guy wants. And so he's trying and trying and trying. And apparently there's not a ton of established voice actors at the time. So whenever they would hire out to Hollywood, these auditions would take hours instead of being minutes, which is what it normally is.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. So the guy's literally taking 3 hours. And by the last 20 minutes, he's like, no, we're good. We're good. And he like kept insisting. So yeah, he had him removed with security from the audition. It's like, leave, we're done.
Fuck.
To be fair, Disney was at its weakest point, so maybe he thought he could get away with it. You know what I mean?
Maybe he could, yeah. I don't know. Maybe he was just like, at some point in the audition, I do not want to do this.
It's like doing an audition for Trauma Team where you're like, no, I'm going to do this again because you guys are not good.
Exactly.
You need all the help you can get, so let's do this from the top.
It just seems like such a sad situation. You're left with nothing but the bare bones of what should be a really well-oiled movie-making machine at this point. And even the boss is like, peace, I'm out. I'm done. I'm going to go run these other money makers. You guys got this, right? And then they have nothing. And then this thing takes forever and they're slaving over the wrong part. I mean, I've definitely been an artist there where you're 4 hours into something and you look at it and you're like, oh no, this is not the part I should have been focusing on. If you have a team of people doing the background, that's great. But if you don't have just people making the front slides happening, what are you doing? And I thought that they would have learned this by now by doing their other couple of animations, you know, that they had done.
The Great Mouse Detective and the Rescuers.
Just any given Disney movie this, really. My goodness, did they just completely shuffle hands so many times that they forgot how to make an animated film?
Yeah, it sounds like that guy was the head of the animation department who was the 18-month CEO, knew what he was talking about. They weren't ready. If I was to pin one thing that doomed this movie the most, it's that. It's a mishmash of things. You have three generations of artists working on it, and they're not working together on it. They're working against each other. It's very clear. It's what you said. Like, those front animations suck. They just suck. And the backdrops are amazing. I bet the old guys worked on the backdrops, quite frankly.
I don't give a shit what's happening in the foreground. I'm going to make this fucking cabin look good. No, this creepy forest. It's going to look so creepy. So this castle's dungeon is going to look so creepy.
And then you see the characters and they're like, hi. You're like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Stick characters. There's a couple times when the princess does a few things, and you're like, she is like a loaf of Wonder Bread with eyes that I'm supposed to care about. Thanks, Disney.
But it's also rough because they have some really amazing stuff in there, like the little circle of light that the princess has is circling.
Who disappears for the rest of the movie?
Yeah. Well, it chased a rat, then it was just gone.
When all the danger is past, that orb shows up again.
Orb was really expensive. We can only do CGI for so long.
For so long, they're just like, we have to pick our poisons with the orb.
It's really amazing the way that they move the shadow in the animation. They do stuff that I've never seen in an animation before. But then it's just like, was there a 7-year-old intern working during this section? Like, what's going on?
Then you fall asleep because you could not invest it in any of the characters other than the pig.
Yeah, we farmed this one out for a competition. It was right at Disney Act. Little Melvin Harris won from North Dakota. So
bring it on in.
Contractually, we have to keep it in there.
There's just constant small talk in the dialogue, too. It seems like it was a dubbed version of another language.
Speaking of, that was before we were rolling when we were talking about Ghibli, but in the first one, you can tell watching it that you're missing a lot by the translation, that someone who's doing the translation is just not doing it justice, and then the voice acting is not doing it justice, and the cut isn't either. There's like obviously several layers of something between you and this story, and it seems like that with the cauldron too. I remember looking at the kids, that's not what they're animating him to be saying, that's not what the old man's saying, and then they keep bringing in an old man that has the same eyebrows and the same nose.
It's like, this is how old men are, right?
I guess.
It's chop suey. That's what this animation
Not
is.
Not real Chinese food.
How many directors do you think worked on this film?
How many? Okay, so we already know 3 CEOs did. So if 3 CEOs did, then I would... I wanted to say 7 directors. I just like that number. So let's say 4 directors.
Very close. At one point, there was 4 directors, though. I will say
At the same time?
At the same time.
At so the same...
So they start out with 1. They don't like what he's doing because he's got like a humorous old school Disney bent to it. Probably the middle, I'm going to guess.
Yep.
So they fire him. They move into something else that's more appropriate.
Okay.
They bring in 4 more directors.
Are they all like just children?
So it's 5.
On top of each other in a trench coat?
Yeah.
Yes. They're the outsiders stacked up on a trench coat.
Are the new directors of the Black Cauldron. I'm an adult. I like to drive.
So am I. Oh, shut up, legs.
I like wine. It tastes good, right?
Quiet arms.
All of them get moved on to other projects except for Richard Rich, Which, yeah, his name is Richie Rich and Ted Berman. So those are the guys who stay on. The other guys who leave, Clements and Michener, they do a bunch of stuff for Disney. They're part of that big 90s revolution in like Disney animation, right? So like they go off to better pastures.
They do.
And they're pissed off at what's going on at the Black Cauldron. So it's just these two who are left to like fall on the sword. Berman retires immediately. He never works on another thing. In this movie bombs, he's just like, I'm done. I'm done. See you later.
He gets sucked into the Black Cauldron. That's,
yeah. That's exactly.
He's the Horn King.
That's a type of bomb for sure, is just not letting something not get produced. Or maybe for this one, either let it not get produced or take even longer to produce it.
How long? Because
you might
forever, right?
They already did 70, some take.
73 is when it starts.
Uh-huh.
85 is when it comes out.
Then take longer because this sucks.
Yeah. I think we've learned.
Throw this away after five. Okay?
This is the Pluto Nash problem, right? Like, their solution is we're going to keep throwing money at it. Like,
and
to
then
save
it runs
it,
dry.
And it gets more and more expensive, and then you can't save it because you
shut it
so
down.
Money.
Just get in there, shut it down.
Just make something and press play.
I saw the dailies. They aren't entertaining. We're shutting it down.
Great. I'm saying let it be shut down, but then a lot of bombs are when they're like, oh, but we're going to make it anyway.
Yep.
Now just make some product out of it.
Yeah, we have a name attached or we have time that deeply invested into it.
Have you ever worked on anything that went totally downhill? I wonder what the point is when you realize, because it seems to me like
everything
is troubled. Yeah.
Okay. Are either of us famous?
everything goes downhill. Expectations are so high when you start any project. Anything that you work towards to gain to a project usually has some momentum in one form or another, and that momentum gets just very much heartbreaked at one like point or another. You got the triangle, and it's just like money, time, quality.
And you're trying to balance all three of those things.
Yeah.
Because if one doesn't work, the other two are going to collapse in on itself.
Exactly. That's what frustrates me so much about this film, is that it's such a studio whore. It's such a Disney product at the time. Like, they had so much money that they have obviously made through these other vehicles that they had done with this big studio force. And they came into this project totally cocky about, we can do that same thing with this very not thought through plot line and character base. But we'll do it because we're the best in town, right? Like, it's like the Buster Douglas.
Right.
Mike Tyson comes in jet-lagged and sick. All right, try to defend your title now.
So I will say, if you're going to do like famous boxer careers, I think Disney's is the closest to Muhammad Ali. And what I mean, it's a meteoric rise. He's refuses to go to Vietnam, like can't box, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And then like Disney's 80s is that whole Vietnam part. The 80s and 70s for Disney is their Vietnam, is what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm getting at here.
Okay. Well, point is, yeah, it definitely gets deep crack on the chin on this one. They were pushing so hard with certain aspects of it, and they just don't hit home with any of, obviously, things that they were pushing really hard with. And they also drove people nuts with it, obviously. In the careers of these people that were working on it, you could tell, like, they were not thrilled to be working on this project. And it probably totally ate at their souls.
That's why dude had to take pictures of the storyboards in the doc that I saw, so that we could know what the missing stuff was, because of all the bullshit politics around that. Like, you don't want to cross Katzenberg, for example. That's a dude who's perpetually powerful. Like, he ran Touchstone Pictures. They put out stuff like Dick Tracy.
That's a tour de force, dude. Oh, it's a tour de force.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, they had like Good Morning Vietnam, all kinds of other stuff. Like, they were a legit movie company. Like, yeah,
they had
at that
all
point.
Of the John Hughes.
No, I watched actually many a Touchstone film.
Yeah, and then Katzenberg also brings in Pixar, which is huge.
Yeah, that's what I know. Katzenberg with the Pixar and Toy Story.
It's still just gutless editing. It's not up to the editor to create content, but it sure feels like everybody just took without adding anything. Like, where a lot of our other bombs had bad reshoots, this has just really bad editing and just gaps, missing holes in it.
Big missing holes.
Once again, Katzenberg, scissors. Like,
yeah.
It's literally like cutting the film, dude.
I gotta cut 10 minutes.
There's part of it going on this, like, kind of slight dramatic music in the background, and it just stops.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where he cut. Yeah. Now we know why they do Oscar winning editors, is because, like, they don't save the film, but at least, like, they know what they're doing.
They actually make the film.
No, they make the film, and that's the hardest job. It's the last line.
Editing is like a chore, but it's an art that actually painting. Everybody else is just making the palette.
Or everybody else is the sous chef, and you're the cook.
The chef itself. Yeah, I don't like to edit. I have to edit all the time. Editors are important. The dude who made Star Trek the Motion Picture editing your picture. I hope he didn't edit that, but like he might have. Because if you ever watch Star Trek the Motion Picture, they do this thing with the Enterprise where they're like going around it and they go dun da dun dun da dun dun, and you're like, okay, it's over, and then they're like dun da da dun 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 dun, and you're like, okay, they did one pass, they're done, dun 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 dun. Like, it repeats that like 25 times. Like, I swear to God, there's like a 7-minute scene of them being like, look at what we can do with this model. It's 1978. And they're like going around it so proud of it. And it's like, it doesn't look good, man. It's a model.
Did not age well.
It aged bad by like 1979.
Right, exactly. Especially at that time.
Oh, man.
That's the thing about original Star Trek being a show, is that it was cheap. And that was the best part.
Yeah, it was like a cheap TV show.
And when it was kind of realistic, you're like, yeah, I can totally see it's foam planets, but it was kind of cool for a second. Well, you're also really high. Well, yeah, true, but...
Dude, like Fantasy Island had a bigger budget than like...
Have you seen the episode of Star Trek with the Horta? Like no hurt eye, right? Like it burns it into the rock, but it's literally a dude under a colored rug. You know what I mean? Like, it's a rug with a couple things painted to it.
He's running around the rug. Yeah. Nothing ever explodes on the Enterprise. They just shake the camera and then everybody else goes like,
By the way, they shake
their bodies.
If you want to see something amazing, go on YouTube, and there's tons of videos of people taking clips from the original Star Trek using that stuff to stabilize it. You can see what the actors are doing, and you just see people that are sitting and then just throw themselves like 3 feet across. It's so funny.
I love that.
It's so weird that the camera sells it like that.
It does.
We needed one of those scenes in the Black Cauldron. Like, the castle is falling down. Like, have it shake. Have people throw themselves to the left and right.
There are so many like cheap cuts through danger too. Like, oh, magical Deus Machina. Like, just like, there
you go. It's like, where's the sword on the king? Should we look at the king very long? No, it's a kid's movie. It's the coolest part, is seeing that dilapidated body, and then you grab the sword off of it. You have to worry, because the sword is magical, very clearly. Be it cursed? Like, I don't know.
There's an undead army. There's so many really cool heavy metal-esque kind of stuff. I mean, not heavy metal, the movie, but like
Megadeth.
Yes.
The Horn King is a Megadeth album cover.
For real. The undead army trouncing across the bridge.
Yes, absolutely. But showing it as if it's one skeleton and its progress across, that's like the Megadeth cover, I think.
Yes. Yeah. That's so heavy and cool. And I don't know how they got away with so many cool things. Actually, even the death that the Horned King dies of is pretty cool, even of itself.
Like, with
him disintegrating is pretty cool. But then they do all this other lame stuff. So it's strange. Just classically getting in its way. If at any time it was going to happen successfully and it wouldn't get in its way and it would be cool, it would have been then, though. Because Great Mouse Detective had some pretty crazy parts. Oh, I could have been this really cool thing. Good. I was just saying Fantasia, you know, like they did some crazy, scary stuff. So they could have just made this really cool thing. Why couldn't the boy be a hero? Why couldn't they just Joseph Campbell it? Why'd they get in the way of it?
They do Joseph Campbell it
a lot. No, but it's like, no, not in a good way. It's very cheap.
I think he does a full circle, but him having to barter away the sword is really weird. And then having a sword immediately, I guess it's that his death and then his rebirth is when he gets the sword back. How is it Joseph Campbell? Tell me, Biggs.
Okay, well, it's Joseph Campbell in that it's a kid in obscurity, and then he gets plucked into this adventure. And at first, he doesn't want to go, right? They do that
reluctant,
faint.
Reluctant hero, yeah.
Because he's like, you need to run off with Henwin. And he's like, I can't do that. And of course he does, because that's how they handle Joseph Campbell. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger's chopping wood. And they're like, we need you to kill 50 people. No, I'm a man of peace now.
Yeah.
Please? Okay. Like, that's all it takes, dude. Yeah. You just have to refuse the call.
But Joseph Campbell also says that if you do refuse the call, that it's going to come find you. And it's going to be terrible. It's going to drag you into it, the adventure.
I mean, that kind of happens to him anyway, though.
I think him taking Hedwin into the forest, into the second location, which is nice that they have a second cabin, plush living that they're having.
That is privileged, isn't it?
So take him to the summer cabin. I know, but it's only full. I know it's terribly out of season, but take the pig that take care of. So he takes her there, I think, as part of the call to adventure.
Yeah.
He could, him not doing it, him staying there and being like, it'll be fine. And then them finding him there with the pig, that's him not accepting the call to adventure. Cause then they get the pig immediately. Cause honestly, from the beginning, when he's like, you must save this pig. And he's like, I will, I'm gonna. You're like, they're gonna get that pig. That kid is incompetent.
Yeah.
And a daydreamer. I feel his pain.
There was also a scene that they cut that, now that I'm thinking about it, would have made the movie marginally better. So he's looking in the pond and he sees himself as a warrior, right? And then he's looking in the pond later, but they cut it. And then the princess comes over to talk to him, and it's about his loss of confidence or whatever. But in the pond, there was supposed to be like him seeing a warrior and then just realizing like he's not a warrior. It's those little tiny things that you put in that make a difference sometimes, like for an animation, because you're also trying to explain it to kids, right?
Right.
So you don't want to literally say what I'm thinking at this moment. Like, if you could show it in a picture, it works better. That's the form, man.
You have to give thoughts pictures too, then. And it's super easy because you can just draw it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be animated.
Reflection and his sword turned into a guitar. And then he became a rock star.
And then he joined the minstrel and then lived happily ever after.
And that would have made more sense.
Yeah, that sounds like a Journey video, I'm going to be honest. That's the middle part, is like Journey.
Yeah.
Megadeth, Journey, Megadeth.
Yeah. With like the two dragons? Yeah.
Yeah. And not a good Journey song either. Like one not on the greatest hits. You know what I'm saying?
Besides Journey.
Like an underground thing they recorded with like a skeezy dude when he was having a bunch of whiskey one night. They just want to bury it.
Got it on LimeWire. I have it with the original screenshot of the weird, creepy dragons on it.
Come on, guys. I got some Foreigner albums you'll be into, too.
That's like Pantera had this glam rock album. It was first album, and it's so funny to look at. And like, I remember Sorry for Music to Go showing it to me, but it was like $60 and I couldn't buy it because it was too expensive.
Yeah.
But it was really rare. Nobody ever believed me when I told them Pantera was a glam rock band, and now I'm just like, look it up on your phone. And then they do, right, and they laugh. That's so what's funny. Great about the information age.
Oh, rest in peace, Steinbeck.
And we've got the Black Cauldron again. We can watch it. They kept it away from us for 13 years. I mean, it's not the worst Disney movie. It's definitely not good.
I think that they also bombed big time because they got in their way with the back end sales. Like, even though everyone was embarrassed by it, you'd still get so many people watching just because you are Disney. So why not just let the people watch the one time?
On the VHS.
Yet they didn't.
You know what I think part of the problem is in the 80s, they're not like Disney like we think about them now. They're like what Warner Brothers is now. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
where it's like they're storied, and on the whole, you would be like, awesome. And you think about all these great things Warner Brothers did, and you look at it now and it's like, what was their best movie? Kong versus like... Godzilla, like a
maybe
a fucking remake
that came
out during the pandemic. Like they're terrible now. And that was what where Disney was at, was like they were in the cycle where they were about to get raided by a corporate raider.
Mm-hmm.
They spun through CEO after CEO. The animation department shuts down for 5 years. They only survived because of Touchstone Pictures. Like, they were not happening.
And their beloved mouse was accused for many, many allegations.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, look up Fatty Arbuckle. It's the same thing. Disney's buried it even on the internet now.
Yeah, but, it's just like, yeah. Oh, God.
But poor Mickey mouse. Did those things.
Mickey did those things.
That's why it's been covered. I shouldn't be talking about this.
It was an era.
If this podcast disappears, tell everyone you know.
But yeah, I think it was not a fair shake, not a very good script.
So when all was said and done, it was a $44 million budget. They hid it to their shareholders and like told them 25, but it was actually 44.
Big time!
Only made $21 million in the box office. Once again, these are made up numbers, right? We don't trust any of this. Adjusted to 2023. $67 million lost out to the Care Bears movie, like the first one.
Care Bears movie is a way better
film. Way more cohesive.
Yeah, makes way more sense.
After that knock at my window, I'm not gonna disagree with you. I love the Care Bears. Don't visit me anymore.
The Care Bears stare. Way.
I get it every day for my corgi.
Yeah.
It only spent 2 weeks on the top five. And then it just disappeared forever. So it played like a movie now. But that was back in the era where if you had a hit, you stayed in theaters for sometimes up to a year.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Right? Like, and sometimes you would come back for a fourth or fifth engagement. Like, because they would get the new thing. But they're like, I don't know, that one's still selling. And the reel's
they
available.
Still just want to do that. Yeah.
I miss that, man. I miss that so much.
It depends on
like. I like having a lot of new movies, but it's stuff like our Cinemark, for example, the big one. It hits these periods where a big movie will come out. And so it'll take, you know, we have, I think, 10 screens at it. It'll take like 6 of the screens. So you only have 4 other screens.
Oh, they just do the big.
Yeah.
The big layout and then disappear.
So you see like 4 or 5 movies at any given time, but they have 10 screens. And it's
Save a screen?
Yeah,
save a screen.
But that's the bummer. It's like the whole model now is like a movie comes out and like kicks ass for 2 weeks and then disappears slowly. And then everything else gets 1 week. And if it doesn't hit, it's gone right away. And like, I like that old model where it was just like you could go to the theater and like, E.T. will be playing for an entire year if you want to see it. You're not necessarily going to get into the show you want to go to, but
yeah. I like it. It's more democratic. If you could have at least some of the other theaters showing and then having that statistic delegate whether or not it's a hit, you could see more of that. But now it's all kind of tied up to something else, I think.
I think it's trying to push new things. I get the point of the 10.
If they're doing 6, it's obviously not as much money to bring that in and have 6 showings, let alone the 4. That's crazy comparatively to when E.T. was coming out and just showing at the one theater again and again.
Maybe 2 screens.
Sure. Right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 or 3.
Like if you weren't in a giant city, it was like, it was typically, like a 2 or 3 screener. Like there wasn't much.
Yeah.
And so it's like a movie hits there. And like if people like it, word of mouth really matters because you would only have like 2 or 3 showings a day and that was it.
And then
you couldn't go to every showing, right?
Could also be sold out for a while and then you couldn't see it. And then you would also want to see it that way.
Back then.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the point too, is like if it keeps getting sold out for 2 weeks and anticipation rises because you're like, man, I want to see that so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes like you're willing to go during the crappy times when nobody would normally go. Like,
yeah.
I understand they're making more money off of this model. They have to be to some degree. But like, I miss the old days where it was like,
of course,
you had a chance to see stuff. And I felt like the good stuff stayed around for longer and the bad stuff was gone relatively quickly.
Just like the Black Cauldron.
Yeah, the good stuff, like Short Circuit 2. And like
I did not say that.
The bad stuff.
Like, Fisher Stevens playing an Indian. No, the performance of his career.
Weekend at Bernie's too, you know? No.
I mean, yeah, that one was not a hit for sure. Are we going to do a Weekend at Bernie's 2 pod? Is that happening?
Oh, no.
I hope.
All right, maybe.
I hope also.
Whose choice is it next time?
Howard the Duck would also be a real.
Ah, no. We just love. No.
Road to Ruin is created and hosted by Alexa Prince, Alex Wolf, and Alex Small, and produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 is written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vibrett. It is performed by Tonight We Write on the album Of the West and can be found on Spotify. Road to Ruin is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.